Hi, this is Joe Ziemba, and I'm the host of the podcast When Football Was Football here on the Sports History Network. This podcast is based on stories, events, and characters from my book called When Football Was Football, The Chicago Cardinals and the Birth of the NFL, which was written shortly after the Cardinals won their last championship in 1947, or so it seems. The reason for this message is twofold. First, to share the great news that the second edition of the book has just been released by McFarland Publishers, and all Sports History Network listeners can now enter a special Sports History Network contest for the opportunity to win one of two free copies of When Football Was Football. We'll be happy to include a personal inscription in each winner's book and then send it out to you with our best wishes. The new book contains about 80 more pages than the original, almost all new archival photos, additions within all chapters based on new research, and an update on the players, coaches, and administrators mentioned in the book. It's everything you ever wanted to know about the early Cardinals, as well as the NFL itself. To enter this free giveaway, go to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. Thank you.
Arm Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast here to share a winning strategy for Father's Day from our partners at Sterling Roastery. If your dad treats his morning coffee like a pregame ritual, you need to introduce him to the Sterling Roastery lineup. This isn't that stale, over-roasted stuff sitting on a grocery shelf. Sterling roasts their beans multiple times a week for unbeatable freshness. The smart play? A coffee subscription. He gets to choose his grind, from French press to espresso, and his favorite roast, Deft. It's a world-class lineup of Java that shows up like a reliable veteran on a perennial powerhouse team. Go to sterlingsoap.com and set him up. He'll thank you with every cup. That's sterlingsoap.com.
Tonight we'll go back in time to seasons past when 22 men graced the rugged fields of yesterday, fighting for one more first down, one more yard gain, one final score that would bring victory after 60 minutes of battle on the gridiron. Tonight we'll explore the world of gridiron greats. Welcome to Gridiron Greats, football history and its memorabilia on the Sports History Network in conjunction with Swick Enterprises, and we're live from the Southport, North Carolina home of Gridiron Greats magazine. I'm Bob Swick, publisher and editor of Gridiron Greats magazine, and I'll be your host for the show. Gridiron Greats is the only publication in America that focuses upon the history and memorabilia of the North American football game since its inception in 1869. We cover 150-plus years of football history and memorabilia. You'll find us on the web at gridirongreatsmagazine.com. At this time, I would like to introduce my co-host. He's a senior contributing writer to Gridiron Greats magazine, a football memorabilia historian, specializing in pre-World War II items, in particular Red Grange, and also Seattle Seahawk items, in particular Steve Largent. He hails from Portland, Oregon. Mr. Joe Squires. Joe, welcome to the show.
Captain, great to be here. Hey, would you mind adding Super Bowl champion Seattle Seahawk, including Steve Largent?
And also Seattle Seahawk items, in particular, Super Bowl champion items and Steve Largent.
Yeah, write that in next time. What is your record when you say football?
What's your record?
Have you practiced that, like in front of the mirror and Brenda yells from the other room, Bob, knock it off?
No, I practice it upstairs if I do it. But I feel as I'm getting older, I can't hold it as long as I used to. It's almost like, who was that? I can't think of the singer. Lightning strikes, Lou Christie, when he has those high falsetto voices.
Oh, yeah.
And as he got older, he barely made it up there. So I'm still trying. Right. Probably a good minute plus, I've held.
Well, we could carry it next to that soccer announcer who goes goal.
Yeah, so. and his enthusiasm broadcasting is just great. It's just phenomenal. There is literally no football announcer who does that at all.
Yeah, shows it's a lot to get excited about over that 1-0 scoring juggernaut, you know, of a game.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But we got an open forum today. We're back after a few weeks off. Both Joe and I have been super busy, and we're trying to line up some guests. But anyways, we're here today with an open forum, and I'm going to hand off to Joe about some 1935 National Chickle incredible pricing and sales.
I have to admit, I spend quite a bit of my time looking over your left shoulder, trying to find, like, in case you're trying to slip a Where's Waldo by me and like add something. It's like when my wife gets a haircut and I don't notice, she gets mad. I live in constant fear that you're going to put something on your bookshelf and then text me after the show and go, "Hey, what the heck, man? You didn't notice."
There are a few different things. I did move it around a little, slightly.
Okay.
So you're gonna have to, at the end of the show, I'm gonna quiz you to see
All
if you
right.
can see,
Well,
better what I'll move.
mostly I noticed the 89 Pacific Wax Pack, Steve Largent Wax Pack, moved. So it probably got moved to the kids table at Thanksgiving, I'm guessing.
There's a couple new things I put there. Actually, one big thing, and I just moved slightly the other thing. So.
All right. So you did get your haircut.
No, my hair's the same.
No, the equivalent of my wife getting, sorry. Well, as you mentioned, we track, one of the things we like tracking is the, provenance and price of our big boy, Bronco Nagurski. And there was a recent sale of one in Robert Edward Auctions, friend of the show,
Good
Brian
friends,
Dwyer.
Brian Dwyer, yes.
Brian Dwyer at Robert Edward Auctions, and congratulations for landing a whale of a card. $118,000 for a PSA 5.
Wow.
Good looking five.
Wow.
I beg your pardon. I have something coming up that's Robert Edward Auctions. This was Love of the Game.
Oh, that,
Prince's
yeah.
Point. My
Average
mistake.
Al, longtime advisor with advertiser with Gridiron Greats magazine.
Yep.
Yes, this was in his auction. And man, oh man, I was a little not overly shocked, but that's great for a five. That's all I can.
Yeah. Well, in his description, I'm sure I'll be getting a call from Al right after this saying, "Hey, thanks for messing that up, Joe." But good looking five. And he I can't get it, but later on in his description down below, he says this used to be a PSA 7 card. The person who bought it doesn't like slabs. He'd be a good friend of yours, Bob. You guys would get together and go bowling and talk about your hate of third-party grading. So he doesn't like slabs, so he cracked out the PSA 7. That's some cojones to take a Nagurski 7 and to crack it out. So he said he put it in
Wow.
his nine sleeve binder, along with the flip behind it. And there it sat for about a dozen years. And then decided to sell. At Al's behest, they got it graded. It graded a five, down from a seven.
Wow.
So
So, in your opinion, before we go any further, is that why would it be downgraded like that, just because they're looking at the cards more closely, or they have a prejudice against high grade chickles? What's going on here?
I don't submit enough cards for grading to know. So I don't have an eye for it. We'd have to ask, Scott Alpaugh that,
Yeah.
he's our, resident grader. As it turns out, after this sold, my short attention span didn't allow me to read the entire lot description. So after it sold, somebody pointed out that it said it used to be in a PSA 7, and lo and behold, I used to own that PSA 7 as I posted on Vintage Football.
Right.
So I got the PSA 7 from a friend and a fellow collector in 2008, I believe, and I had it for 4 or 5 years, and I ended up trading it for what was the cornerstone of my collection, a PSA 8 Nagurski.
Right.
So that seven I traded to Rick Snyder at Mint State for the PSA 8 when Fight for Old DC sold, old John Isaacson, his divorce sale.
Yeah.
And I compared some of the dots above the Bronco, And yeah, that's that used to be my card. And you and I were talking before the show. It's just good quality nags. I mean, this is a good looking one.
Right, right.
I can remember when I had the opportunity to buy that PSA 8. I was trading the 7 and a couple shekels for the 8. And I was this 7 was so nice. I was having second thoughts, and I remember sending
Yeah.
scans of the 7 and 8 to a couple friends. I'm like, what do
Yeah.
you think? I mean, this seems, I don't know, very subjective, which grading is. And
Right. And that, and that's the sad part about all these numerical grades and guys going crazy to get the higher number, even though the card doesn't look any better than what he has, and he's going to spend all that extra money just to get the number. Okay, but is there any aesthetic beauty to the cards anymore? Or are you just, and to me, the mentality, the hobby, a certain part of it is just, I need to have all PSA 10s or I don't have anything. Okay, so I'm going to buy a card out of a pack, take the pack, immediately express mail it to PSA to get a PSA 10, get it back on my table to flip it. Yada, yada, yada. And what is the point of this? I mean, that's a beautiful card. And to me, as much as I don't really follow, grading, but I have to, I have no choice, that card should be a higher grade than a five for a card that's almost 100 years old. And it doesn't make sense.
Well, the proof is there. It used to be in a higher grade. I mean, it is weird to. I don't know. I mean, it's weird. I mean, you're right. I mean, what they say, the registry is a hell of a drug. I
Right,
mean, and
right.
to chase that. I had some friends who were dealers, and I can remember being at a national with them in like 2009, 2010, and they would just sweep through and buy collections and then go up to their hotel room and do some minor work on them. And then
Well,
the objective was to get them in top loaders. And to
yep.
get them to PSA grading so they didn't have to haul them back home. So, I mean, they would submit, 2 or 3,000 cards before the end of the national.
Yeah.
And
And
hope.
again, what is that proving other than you want to make money? You're not
Yeah.
doing a lot for the hobby, in my opinion.
Yeah.
All you're doing is taking all these cards out of circulation, you're grading them. You're making them unaffordable for an average collector. So why would an average collector get started in football card collecting? Let's say, I want to do a run. Let's talk out loud. I want to do a run of 1948 to 1955 Bowman football cards. Well, good luck, because I don't know how many raw cards are available on the market. Obviously, they're going to be lesser grade, which is to an average collector, that would be fine.
Yeah.
So long as you have number 21 or whatever in that set, you have a card of it, even if it's in lesser condition. But what does it actually do for the hobby? And again, I know I'm over concerned about it, and I try not to be oblivious to the fact this is a multi-million dollar industry today, and
Business.
a lot of big players in there. They're not people like me anymore,
Yeah.
or trying to go to a show and say, hey, you got any 55 Bowman football? Yeah, I
Yeah.
have, a handful here. Okay, let me buy them. I want to make a set out of them, so on and so forth. Those days are getting fewer and far between. So.
It was always a business. I mean, you tell stories of setting up shows in the late 80s.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah. And baseball was booming at the time, and I had always been in football, so it really didn't make a difference to me. I was still looking for my own football stuff. And especially the oddball football stuff. But again, I saw dealers there killing themselves for 88 Topps baseball wax boxes and breaking them open and selling the stars. So on and so. I mean, I get it. I do understand that. But
For
I
you,
think
it's a
I'm.
hobby. It's a hobby for you. You're a
Right.
passionate collector. You've been as a child. For me, it's a hobby. For some people, it's a business. I have a buddy here in Portland who was a general contractor, for 10, 15 years, and he did shows on the side. Well, he started making enough moolah that he was able to quit his job. And now he's a full-time dealer. Kurt Schmigdahl, quit his job, really
Yeah, I
educated
mean,
about
you
it.
know, and it takes over, you know, it's fun to do a shell rather than, you know, being a general contractor trying to break down 2x4s all day and breaking your back type of thing. So
But if it becomes your job, is it fun anymore? I mean,
I don't know. I really don't know because I always separated it because for the most part, when I was doing a show, I was trying to get money so I could put it into my collection and keep growing my collection. That was my theory. And I remember at that time, the card dealer that I worked for, his only concern was at to set up at a show and continue to get more inventory. So in other words, anything he sold, he would immediately take that money and put it into inventory. So he had it, and he had an incredible inventory. But then again, it's all for naught if you don't market your inventory. If you just want to sit on it for 100 years, then fine. That you know, there's nothing wrong with that either, you know.
I would imagine just like anything, it becomes the grind. I
Right.
mean, once you start doing it full, you're just like you said, you're trying to collect inventory to sell it to make money. I mean, you've got to constantly do it. Because I've asked, I mean, remember we've asked, John Spano before, what do you collect? I mean, those guys are collectors. They have a full-time job, but they ran MSB, on the side. Taking that leap where it's your job, I would imagine it really taints your view of the hobby because all of a sudden you're grinding away.
You only have 24 hours in a day to do things. So obviously, if you're working full time, you're subtracting one third of your day, and you basically then have two thirds of your day to concentrate on what you need. If you have a family, you know, it's very very stressful. So again, in my case, when I was doing it, I knew I didn't want to do, and at a, for a couple of years, I did a show a month, which was a lot. But there were enough shows in the area where I lived back in Connecticut. There were a lot of shows every month. So I would do a rotational, you know, basically in four parts of the state, I would do shows. But after a while, nothing changed there. You had the same customers. If you didn't have the inventory, they sold all your inventory, and then they really weren't going to buy anything more. And I think it's interesting today. For the brief exposure I've had with shows down here for a couple of years, I can see that the buying mentality in the crowd is more so, what do you have new? I saw this last time. It's nice to look at, but I have no desire to buy it type of thing. And again, because the market down here is more Pokemon and more newer material, you know, vintage is a brutal sell. So I basically stopped doing shows here.
I'm proud of you for saying the word Pokemon, by the way.
Well, I have to. I mean, because it's everywhere, you know. And it reminds me in a way of the Beanie Baby craze, of the Pog craze. I mean, I remember a couple of card dealers that got out of cards and they went into Pogs full time, and they took a bath in. And I'm just waiting for the next shoe to fall with Pokemon, and the bubble, you know, pops out of it, and that's it.
It's
So.
like you're like George Herbert Walker Bush when he would say Saddam Hussein. I mean, he'd mispronounce Pokemon. For you, for the listeners, we have a football text thread, and whenever we want to somebody wants to put a quarter in Bob and wind him up, we just say, Pokemon, and
You'll get a lot out of it.
the tirade of the text
Well,
is
we were in the Walgreens drugstore. What was it, a month ago? I know I took the picture and I sent it. I'm looking at the magazine rack. See if there's any sports magazines whatsoever. There was not one sports magazine, but they had three Pokemon
gosh.
magazines, and I'm like looking, you know. And there was a woman there stocking the shelves. She said, "You need any help, anything?" I said, "No, I'm staring at the Pokemon magazines," and she kind of chuckled.
Garbage. Get off my
I like
lawn. I love it. Well, the show I went to here in Portland, I was actually pretty big. Except the aisles were, I mean, it was shoulder to shoulder. And I would say it was 50% Pokemon.
Pokemon, yeah.
I mean, which I would just cruise right on by.
And my friend in Florida, when he goes to, there's a couple of shows in the Naples area there in Fort Myers, Naples area. And he says that it's roughly half and half, but what
Oh
they
my
do
goodness.
there, they separated the sports cards and vintage cards are on one side of the show, and then the Pokemon's on the other side. So he says it's easier navigating. Because he said, I don't want to look at that. I have no desire to look at that. I'll look at, you'd rather look at the cards type of thing. So I think that works better. The promoter in Wilmington tried mixing everybody together and really didn't make sense to me because I'm a vintage collector dealer. I have no desire to look at that table, that Pokemon table. I want to, where are the cards? They're all scattered in this big room. All right, so now I got to walk the entire room, waste, half hour walking around where I could be spending a half hour at a dealer's table. So.
At the Borland show I went to, I went with a friend who, who's started collecting a little bit, and he's like, "How does this compare to the National?" I'm like, "Oh, this room is smaller than the autographs area of the National. I mean, and the aisles are wider, but there was one vintage person there selling. I mean, I think the oldest I saw, was, 78, 79, but saw one guy selling a couple 72, but and then there's one person who had just some beat up old 48 Bowman and et cetera. But oh well, I was in and out of that show in an hour.
Yeah, I believe it. I believe it. And again, I was kind of shocked going to the National last year because again, I know how big it is. I mean, I've set up so many times at them, so on and so forth. But this was incredible. This past year was incredible. Just seeing the mass of humanity there, and they opened up the third floor there, or the second floor.
Oh,
When they had
geez.
dealers set up with single tables, and that was just brutal to navigate. And I felt sorry for those dealers up there because I don't know how you could do anything, And if I had to set up there, I would say this is a waste of money because people can't, you can't even navigate down. You're so tight. And I don't know what the purpose of that was. Why don't you make it more customer friendly? This is what I don't understand. It's not dealer friendly, and it's
Well,
really not customer friendly. So
I
what
didn't
is
know that. I didn't know they moved up the floor. I mean, how many people on the main floor even knew there were people upstairs? I mean,
Well,
that.
they had enough signage to say there were so where the escalators were, you went up the escalator and you got there, and then everything was like it was a real open. I had never been up there; it was real open, but the left-hand side were like four or five rows of tables set up, but they were too crowded. I mean, there was no room to walk around. I made one quick walk around. I really couldn't look at anything. People with the and again, I get it. They got their backpacks. They got their want list and everything. They got to stop. They got to pull out their cards. You want to buy them? Blah blah blah. So it wasn't a pleasant experience doing that. So honestly, this year I had no intention of going back. And when I found out all the hotel rooms around the National were completely booked already, I said, "Well, I'm not going to go and spend an hour commute every day just trying to get back and forth to the National." Instead of having one near, a hotel near the facility there.
Are they all sold out? That's never. I want to go to the National this year, but I don't have my hotel room yet.
The rumor I heard about the hotel was that the National actually booked everything. They booked all the immediate hotels completely. So they control them. I don't know what, if it's for mostly dealers and the guests or whatever. I have no idea.
Oh,
I haven't
interesting.
really researched it because I'm not bothering to go to it. And I'd rather go to a more vintage show where I don't have to deal with the Pokemon crowds. Which I think in the long run, one day it may be
Tom Gig.
eloquently, it may be a strong a real sticking point for a lot of collectors going there. If you're going to spend that kind of money, I don't want to be eating Pokemon customers and tables. I want to see my vintage stuff, or I want to sell my vintage stuff, and I want to be separated completely from that situation. And I think down the road it could be a drawing point. That's why I'm looking for. I know the Strongsville show in Ohio is still a classic vintage show, and there's a couple other shows in the country which are still classic vintage. And those are the ones I think, I will make an attempt to either go to and or set up that type of thing with what I got remaining.
I had some wax packs I wanted to submit, and I wanted to talk to Steve Hart about a a box of wax. But man, if the, like you said, if I've got to, jump in an Uber and, go 30 minutes, that reminds me of the Cleveland, show. That was horrible. Just having to take transit every time to go there. It was just,
And I
well,
remember the last time I was in Cleveland, Eric Stang
had a car.
was in the same hotel. We were in downtown Cleveland near the Brown Stadium, and we had a, basically whatever it was, $60 at that time round trip back and forth to the show every day. And
Wow.
that was crazy. And then the first Cleveland show, I was closer, but there was absolutely no, there were no restaurants. It was like a McDonald's there and a couple drugstores, and that was it. So it is what it is.
All right, well, I'm gonna have to ask if anybody wants to share, right? Anyways, I was trying to go with my son, but oh well. All right,
All
well,
right, the other nag now, as we got to move along here.
This is
Thorpe, I'm sorry. The
another
Thorpe.
card that you're moving on to Jim Thorpe here. I like this card. I've always liked this card. This sold in Heritage re recently, was it? No, excuse me. This is again
Al.
Al. Yeah, I beg your
Love
pardon.
of the game. That was in Love of the Game, too.
I need to label these a little better. I'll talk to our producer. The reason I've always liked this 1922 Xena Jim Thorpe, well, I mean, it's kind of a shame to see him slumming it around in a baseball uniform, but the PCL is Pacific Coast League, and this P on his chest is the Portland Beavers. Jim Thorpe played for the Portland Beavers, and I have a photo of him hanging in my office at what was Civic Stadium then. So there's one PCL card, and it's him wearing it's him as a Portland Beaver, which I've always liked.
Now, go back to the photo real quick. I just want to point out something to our listeners and viewers.
Yep, hang on a
On
second.
the for anybody in baseball, Z-Nuts are very, very popular a card set to collect, but they also had a tab to them. I can see on the
Flip.
label there's no tab, it's
No
hand cut.
tab.
But
Hand cut.
there's a tab attached to most if you want to collect a complete Z-Nut card, there's a tab attached to it. Those are much tougher to find.
Very rare. So I have one of these Thorpe Z-Nuts. I think mine is a PSA 1, no tab.
Yeah,
Very hard to find with a tab, as you said.
they're very, very rare. They're mostly found without the tab, and they're mostly cut at the same time. So the next thing you're going to show, I believe, is the. We're going to go into waxes now, or that what?
I wanted to show one more Jim Thorpe thing, and it's called the Thorpe Physique.
Yeah, the physique
And
photo.
this might be not safe for work for some people, but pretty dang interesting. I've seen these photos before, but how. I think they're cool. Whoops. Didn't mean to. I was touching my
Well,
screen.
that was classic. That was the classic body pose at that time for weightlifters and muscle men from the 20s and the 30s. So those pictures were very, very prevalent. And that's what, a 1910.
Says circa 1910, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say this is him right around the Olympics, because there's. We've had several people on the show talk about, Jim Thorpe wanted to win, gold at the Olympics to impress a woman and her dad to marry her. And it's like, it's been said that's the best shape of his life. So here he is wearing a jock strap and standing there. There's one of him on the side. It's not as risque. So the one of him in front, the one on the right, is going for the highest price. This is in Heritage right now. I hope I'm not outing an auction for anyone. This is going in Heritage right now. Pretty odd.
And that covers a lot of spectrums for collectors. The bodybuilder collectors who collect photos, especially of the early bodybuilders, the Thorpe collectors who are collecting anything Thorpe, and wrestling boxing type collectors who will look for those types of photos also.
Yep.
So looking at wax, you're going to give a shout out on something you're looking for your collection before we
Yeah.
started.
I was talking to you before the show. I have I've been collecting unopened wax, for quite a while. And there's a couple that you missed. Hang on, I'm working on sharing this. And 1973 Tops is one that I'm missing. And so this is called the Jumbo Box. This is a little offshoot of it. Whoops, a little too much there.
And there were 20, there were 24,
15 card packs
right.
in it.
They were known as jumbo packs. 15 card packs at that time were known as jumbo packs because the
Yep.
transition was from 5 cards to 10 cards in the 70s. And that was something very new, that Topps came out with a 15 card pack. And
Yep,
again, a
you can see the
distinct.
little orange label on it says 15 cards, 15 cents.
Right.
It says the normal wax box had had 10 cards in a pack for
Right.
10 cents.
10 cents.
These are the jumbo packs, and then there's only been two of these ever to sell. This one just sold, as I mentioned, in BBCE, excuse me. It just about a week ago. So a good place, for it to be. Steve Hart, so second one I've ever seen. And I obviously, didn't not obviously, but yeah, I didn't quite have the scratch to take this down. $36,000, that includes the hammer price. One sold in Heritage in December of 2022 for 54,000.
Wow.
So almost a 30, 35% haircut from a previous sale 4 years ago, 3.5 years ago.
And speaking from experience back at that time, that was not readily found at candy shops or drugstores where you would traditionally buy your football cards. So the distribution of it, I think, was vastly different than the wax boxes from some of these right here.
Yeah.
And I have no recollection whatsoever of ever seeing them. I found out about them as years went on, but I never remember seeing them at the drugstore. I was buying football cards at that time. I know they went to 10 cents. It was 10 cents a pack, and it was 10 cards, and that was basically it. So.
Yeah, here's the description that Steve Hart put in. 73 stands out toughest. A
Right.
lot of Hall of Famers: Jack Ham, et cetera. Franco Harris, Ken Stabler, Art Shell, Curly Culp, Ken Reilly. 24 pack, 15 cards per pack at the 15-cent price. This is a second full box. Steve mentions the first one. He didn't say where, but it was Heritage. In December of 2022, I have a screenshot of
Right.
it to save, obviously. 54,000. The second box ever. I mean, and he, so he calls that out.
Yeah. So in that same auction, reading what I said, they're basically 73 to 76, that picked up from in the same source in that auction. So that the
Yeah.
person was obviously a collector at that time and decided to just
Well,
put them away, and that's it.
in this second paragraph, it says the provenance elevates this piece even further. The box originates from a former Topps employee and retains a strip of masking tape with handwritten dates and internal codes. Classic indication is material cut directly from Topps. So this was in somebody's lunchbox, or whatever. I don't know if they gave stuff away like that,
See, I never confirmed and I never denied, and I had heard one story from an old timer many, many years ago who said that Topps would on occasion sell to the employees boxes at, whatever the cost was type of thing. I don't know if that was ever true or not. I have no idea. And it's the same thing with printer scrap. How many bad sheets got out, snuck out of there for whatever reason? Or they said, well, instead of throwing it out, can I take a couple sheets home to my kids? And they would say, yeah, I mean, do it. We're only going to throw it out type of thing. And that's it, which I think is where a lot of the Hancock cards came out of. over the years, and the bad printing sheets came out of.
Yeah, and this is just this is the December of 2022 Heritage one. You can see it's this provenance was it's the only one, the only one ever, and which it was at the time, and there's 54,000.
Whoever bought that and paid that amount of money, I'm wondering if they bid on the second box and they control the entire inventory of the.
Boy, that's pretty interesting because 73 is one of the hardest boxes to get. A normal box, 24 packs with dime packs, $22,000 to $25,000. So you're paying almost $1,000 a pack for them inside a sealed BBCE box, wax box. You can get 73 wax packs, PSA graded Lucy's, for about, $400 or $500. So there's a double premium for having them in a sealed box.
And again, I go back to, like I was saying, back in the 80s, I don't know how many boxes, wax boxes I sold for $5, which were the black markoffs, which I ended up buying. I remember at one show, a dealer just wanted to get rid of them. They had a variety of them. And he said just, he was asking five. And I want to say it was like 10 or 12 boxes I bought. And I paid something like $30 or $35 for them. And I made big money on them as the years went on. I sold a few for 15, a couple for 20. And I kept my 86 football box because I figured Rice would be doing something down the road.
You
I think I sold that for like $100.
can almost start a business, Bob.
I know. But.
Just as a quick example, when was it? August of 2025, last year. Here's BBC, August of 2024, I beg your pardon. Here's BBCE selling a 73 Topps football. These are dime bat packs. You can see it in the upper right-hand corner
20,000.
of the box. 22,000. So 24 packs, 15 card jumbo, two sales, 36,700 just recently, and 54,000 4 years ago versus 22,000. And this price has come down. I remember one of these like 2.5 years ago, a box came up and I'm like, oh, okay, that's great. I'll fill in a gap because I have a 72, 74. Most of them are pretty easy. The 71 is going to take a while. And I was just stunned at how much it went for. And I'm like, holy moly. So when the second one came up, it's kind of like what you say, where it's like, the early bird gets the worm, but it's the second mouse that gets the cheese.
Well,
And I was really
I
hoping
think
to get the second mouse.
the other thing with the 73 Topps run or the 73 football run, that's the first year that it was one series. So that should add a little something to the value of it, as it is the first full series that you could have bought in a full series, and you only had one. You didn't have to wait for series one or series two or series three in the case of 72 Topps, which was one of the worst
Oh my
marketing
gosh.
decisions they ever did.
That
So,
third series 72 box is I'll
well, I
never
mean,
forget.
they're rare. I mean,
They're very rare.
besides Fritz Cards and Wisconsin having them, if he still has them unopened,
You're right. 73. Yeah.
they're not
I
around.
never thought about it that way. You're right. Of course, you're right. You're the captain.
The thing with the 72 Topps, and again, I had no inkling, I had no idea whatsoever there was a third series to that set until probably the mid 80s when I found out. Perchance I saw a Fritz catalog at a show, and I'm looking through it, and I'm saying, "What is this third series?" And then I finally, look more closely in the Beckett big guide, my original big guide from like 86 or 87, and I saw the whole third series, and I saw the prices for it, and I just said, "Forget it." I mean, this is crazy. I mean, that took me probably a good 10 years to do the third series the way I did it, and this was before the internet, before anything. And I just happened that the card shop I ended up working part time as the years went on, he came across a bunch of them. Somebody brought them in, so he bought them right away, and then he sold them off to me. So I got like half the set from him. And then the rest were just brutal,
Oh
brutal,
my gosh.
brutal to find.
Just hearing you talk about a Fritz, catalog, piques my interest. Because I don't know if you probably like 2 years ago, somebody came on VFC and they were talking about, oh, they had some screenshots. Let me share this with you. They had some.
Larry Fritz was the original card dealer, I mean, from the 1970s, and his foresight
Oh,
was just
absolutely.
incredible to do what he did, the way he just bought everything.
Absolutely.
And he had a warehouse which apparently he owned, and he'd
Look
stock everything and sell it.
at
So
this. Look at this, though. This is, I took a screenshot. Well, somebody posted this on VFC, or I
yeah.
maybe it. And just look at some of these sales. And I forget what year this is, but this would have been, 18 years ago. And GIA, when Mike Baker was there, is pretty popular. But mostly that 1958 Topps football, $750. That same thing would be, $10,000 now.
I mean, the prices of wax are just they're mind-boggling to me. And again, in a way, I kind of saw that back then, but then again, I didn't know. I mean, you only got a limited amount of money, and do so much and no more.
And you can only carry inventory for so long,
Exactly.
also.
Exactly.
Here's one you might like. A couple of these you recognize in here, including a 65
Oh,
tall boy, GAI graded. But
all the Phillies, the beautiful Phillies there. I mean, I
look at that
remember.
price, 5,500. Even back then, 5,500 for a tall boy. Somebody was really after that. I remember saving those just because it was just cool as heck to
Yeah,
see.
I think a collector was asking me, we were conversing by email. So he said, "All right, so if you break up your collection, what are the last things you would want to sell?" Because he really is interested in my 65 Topps. And I said, "I really feel that I could break up my run, with the exception of my 1960 to 1988 cards, because those are the ones that I find the greatest interest in. I have the best memories of them, so on and so forth. My everything from 99 up, is literally meaningless to me. And 60 to 72 is just so pure, because you got the Fleer AFL cards, you had the Philly NFL cards, you had Topps all those years, you had some great insert sets. And then fast forward to the 70s, starting in 76, you had Fleer in action, teams to 88. And I still remember buying both Fleer and Topps packs and try to put the sets together. Well, Fleer packs were fun to put together because they were only 88 card or 67 card. They were small sets. They put a set together with great ease. So that would be the focus. Everything before it, the 50s. Yeah, I was born in 1958, but I have, obviously no recollections of that. And a lot of my 50s cards are beaters. And Leaf, as we've talked about a million times, and we talked about once, I have virtually no cards greater than X, if at all, sets. I have beaters, I have GVG, and that's it.
GVG. Here's one last grab of that I wanted to share.
Okay.
It's this, and namely, just because it's got this 55 Topps All-American rock,
6,000.
something you very rarely see. I mean,
And that wrapper was, when I was collecting wrappers, that wrapper was, I just could not find that wrapper anywhere. I couldn't, I a couple times I saw it in auction, I got outbid real fast.
just the wrapper is popular. I mean, look at that. So I mean, I have a 55 Topps All-American cello with Red Grange on it. It's OC, but it was, that struck a couple things to me. 55 Topps is one of my favorites, and to have Grange on the front. But I don't think I've ever seen a 55 wax pack come up for sale. So I have this screenshot simply because of that.
And that's a steal at 6,000.
At 6,000, that would be, yeah, that'd probably be 70,000, if
Yeah,
not
I was
more.
gonna say that would probably push well over 75,000 right
Yeah, that. So I love that just because of that. I have one more, but nothing huge. Oh yeah, nothing huge. It's a great art to be able to keep hands below and to be finding things and sharing them while conversing.
I'm even shocked now. You're talking about, again, just touching base with rappers. Some of the rappers from the 80s now, I'm seeing strong prices, even though they're common.
Really?
Yeah, like 82 wax pack. I'm talking the wax packs.
Yeah, that surprises me.
So again, there are a lot out there, but I've noticed the last few years they're starting to increase in value. But again, as collectors mature, they go into the display boxes, they go into the wrappers themselves, they go into the unopened material, and that creates a market for it. And I always say, just start in 1990 to 2015, try to put one pack together from all everything that was produced is impossible. It can't be done. So.
From everything that was produced. Because right now, I mean,
It's such a joke. It's not even funny.
how many variations of wax and blaster packs? It's called the blaster pack nowadays, isn't it? Because it's not a wax pack that can come unsealed. It's
Right.
unsealed some. Yeah.
All right. What else we got? We're getting close to our time frame.
That's
Again, if you're not subscribed to Gridiron Greats magazine, what are you waiting
you waiting for? What? Seriously. That's all I had. I follow a lot of that wax, and right now there's a REA. REA
for?
has an auction that's got what, 3 4 days left, I think. Isn't it? Three, I think it ends this Sunday. Has quite a few runs, including a I don't want to out this auction, but including a 73. So, and what I like about REA is sometimes, yeah, I mean, it's so baseball centric. Sometimes things fall through the cracks. So
Right,
I'm really hoping nobody notices this one box I need. I'm hoping to be that guy who puts the data point very low on the graph.
that's anybody who has bid on it, please rescind
Oh.
your bid and allow our co-host.
Yeah. Who's got two thumbs and needs a 73 wax pack box? This guy.
If you have it and you want to do a private duty sale between the two of you, I will connect you with my co-hosts. But
Reach out to my agent, Bob Swick. You can
I
find him at
will
Gridiron Greats.
broker the deal itself.
So some really good wax. I man, talk about a grind there. I mean, what does REA do? Quarterly auctions now, and they try and have one big one. That's got to be a full-time job, is just because REA has that reputation of just higher end consignments.
I'm
So
sure. I look at Alan Love of the Game and the catalog, and I love his online catalog. I thoroughly enjoy going through it. In fact, Alan and I, we talked about it a couple times, and I said at some point when the cost becomes way too great to mail anything, I will do that with the magazine. I mean, we have a PDF version already, which a lot of people are now switching over to because they realize that mail is not as dependable as it once was. And I'm sending stuff out, and people are telling me they're getting it 2 3 weeks later, and we're sending it first class mail.
Oh, that's odd.
So it's disheartening for me to deal with that. So, anyways.
Don't think I've ever ha missed one. But I'm also not timing it. A lot of times you'll let us know,
Yeah, well,
hey, these, a GG just shipped, so I'll be looking
the
for it.
issue is at the printer, and hopefully they will start shipping beginning of next week. So hopefully people will start getting them next week, the end of the week or whatever. But again, it's so hit or miss. It's frustrating, not just to myself, but to many other businesses and your mailing,
What I love about Al's online catalog is when you click the next page, it makes the sound of a page turning. I dig that. I think that's just such a nice little classy touch, which is just out, just with his background in marketing like that.
It is. But I also said to Al, you still got a lot of old timers who are not as computer savvy and they still like the physical catalog. I get that. I mean, it is what it is. So
What do you do with your catalogs? I mean, you get a Love of the Game catalog. What do you do?
all the catalogs I get now are all electronic. I don't
Oh, okay. Oh, good
get
for
any,
you.
yeah, I don't
Good,
get any
good.
print anymore. And I understand because it's costly to mail. I get it. They get it.
Yeah,
So, and
costly
I,
to print and mail. Holy moly.
yeah,
I
I mean
mean,
the,
I think he was saying it's like, he told me once, like as far as his, cost of goods, his COG, I mean, he's like, I want to say he said it was like 5% of his costs. I mean, you print and ship those things. I mean, and then
is
the
the,
worst part is like you ship them and then you have a correction. You can modify something on the website, on an online catalog. That's gone. It's tough because an auction will open and I'll go on it and I will, put my feeler bids in. I'll watch things. I might do that a couple times. So I've gone through it. I've, searched for my keywords in case there's a Z nut that's under baseball, something like that. And it's tough because then a week later I get the catalog. And I open the very expensive wrapper with the catalog, and I'm like, and I thumb through it. I'm like, I've already seen all this. I sadly throw it in the trash. I mean, I might spend 2, 3 minutes thumbing through it. I like to look at like the first 20 or 30 items just to see what made the cut. But
Still have all
it's tough.
the catalogs from BST because
Yeah, ditto.
I
Yeah.
mean they were to me it's they were historical in nature, especially when they
Without a
sold
doubt.
Mike Blaisdell's collection. I mean it,
Oh.
I mean the stuff there is one of one, and it's the history of the hobby as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, well, Mike Blaisdell's, gosh, boy, that just,
The
I.
cat the cat those catalogs to me are very, very important to
Yeah.
maintain the hobby. And
Yeah.
again, electronically is good too, for the simple reason you could always, contact a Love of the Game and say, hey, would you mind email me the catalog
Yeah.
if you wanted for my
He
file?
has an opt out, and then he'll give you what is it, like $25 towards shipping if you opt out. So yeah, I opt out of his, but the other ones don't. And I remember at a national, like 8, 9 years ago, talking to Al about it. I'm like, man, just online. And he's like, nope, there are half of my people want a physical catalog. They want to smell the ink. They want to sit there, on
As
with
a
their.
reference, and because again, you don't have Beckett's floating around anymore. They're not being updated well, and they want a catalog of older material so they can use it as a reference. And that's
Yeah.
a part of auction catalogs. That was always an important part of them.
I never thought about it as using it as as a reference for older material. But then again, I've had several threads where somebody talks about something, and then an older collector's like, well, here's a catalog from 2007, that I took a photo of, and you're like, wow, that is kind of cool. I'm a minimalist. I like throwing stuff away. I have in my basement, I have stacks of all my gridiron grates in order, and then next to it is probably about 30 catalogs that I've kept, but not that many.
I've had quite a few readers, tell me that they use their gridiron grates actively because they'll, we talked about a set or we talked about
Yeah.
a program or something, and they use it as a reference tool. And it was like, Reverend Mike Moran always said he always used it as a
Yeah.
reference. So.
I wrote an article last year, I forget what it was. Oh, 70s. I forget what article I wrote, but I remember somebody had written, I was writing about the big set, and I think Blaisdell had written about like one card in that, and I went back and referenced it. So a lot of my gridirons have so I made that spreadsheet, I think like 4 or 5 years ago, that I shared with you of what they call each gridiron grate on the front, because it'll be like, LX and this, And before you took it over, there were a couple mistakes where they jumped sequence and this. It was kind of funny to watch. But then I put like what articles were in each magazine. And then I have little tabs, little sticky tabs in each magazine. So if you look at my magazines, there's all these little different colored tabs in there with, 84 Tops article, kind of thing. That's my quick reference, I guess,
That's what a lot of people do, or a lot of people scan. I know some people scan the articles that they use and keep them as a file
Oh, interesting.
and on their computer, and they use it as a reference, so on and so forth. I know the 62 Post articles and super collectors we've had, they get a lot of reference too, in their collections and so on and so forth.
Those are those. Yeah, those are. We had
Cool.
like three collectors, three 62 Post collectors on the show, and I just remember I'm like, wow, this set. Talk
Head
about.
on. And the only thing I take some comfort in, I still have the 62 Post Packers, but I
Oh,
did sell
wow.
off my set, and I did sell off most of my commons from that, extra commons I had from it. But well, we're almost out of time, and we had a great open forum here.
Really quick before we sign off, let's look at that bookcase and what did you change? Because like I
All right.
said, I see the Largent there now in the stand that I sent you, but I don't see the White.
My name tag is causing you not to see. I don't know if you can see.
There's Steve. Okay, all right.
So I put in a Bart Starr, I mean a Brett Favre, and then also a nice auto. Can you
What
make
is
it out?
that behind Largent? What is that old postcard?
That's the Orang
Oh,
ticket.
Oorang Indian. Okay, gotcha. Army Navy ticket. Oh, that's a good one. Gosh.
And then I also have a plug for Tackling
Yes.
NL. And to let everybody know, Jared has a new book out, which
Oh my
is
gosh.
Bo Jackson, Collecting Bo Jackson.
Bo Jackson, one
And
of my faves.
being a two-sport gentleman, I think that's going to be a very hit of a book. He did a lot of research on that
A lot
and.
of photos, he said, is very photo heavy, very cool. Yeah, he posted that in VFC today. That's going to be cool. Jared, he's such a sharp guy. I love getting texts from him because they're always just creative,
He's great. I appreciate all the help he gives us.
Wait, we had a book
Magazine.
collector on two times in a row about a month
Ben
ago.
Carpenter.
Look at your book collection there. And
It's
that Red
minimal.
Grange one on the top shelf midway always gets my attention, but
It's
because that's one of
minimal.
my faves.
I don't have I only have a couple hundred books.
Yeah.
I don't have
Well, if you custom made a shelf with little lights like he had, that it'd probably grow
Other
it.
side over there is all my Packers stuff. One half of it is Packers, and the drawers underneath are all my Packer programs, which I got to start getting to going through and cataloging. So I'm still the only thing I regret up here in my new man cave is I don't have enough bookshelves. I should have built more. So that's going to be a project. I'm trying to figure out how I want to do it. I got a couple of stand-up bookcases, which are minimal.
Yeah, you put too many books in them and they just start to
Yeah,
sag, sway. Yeah.
exactly. Well, that's it. And we had a great talk, Joe. Thanks for being on, helping us.
Absolutely.
And we'll be back shortly with another show. Again, I'm working on two guests, just trying to coordinate some time frames with them, and we'll be back featuring some collections.
We got to get John Spano on and have him talk about his tales from behind the table. I enjoy that little article, the articles he wrote.
A lot of readers enjoy that. They really get they've gotten a different perspective of what's going
Yeah.
on there. And again, John is probably one of the most honest dealers you could possibly
Oh.
meet. And we need a lot more John Spanos in the hobby and in
I
the
would agree.
dealer.
I just and lately all these stories about things being stolen and stuff like that, it just security is would be something I'd like to talk about.
You got multi-million dollar cards everywhere. And you got two security guards walking the
The whole floor.
and then now all of a sudden, the last show I saw a couple actually arm Chicago. I don't know if they were Chicago Rosebuds,
Yeah.
people walking around.
A small show in Portland had two cops walking around, two Portland police.
Yeah. So yeah, I
Yeah.
mean, you gotta have it. So it's
Yeah, I
what it
agree.
is. I don't know. All right. Thanks for watching or listening, and we'll see you later. Take care.
Adios.
Hi, this is Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast. Do you know your gridiron history? Well, we have an interactive trivia football game for you. You're the quarterback. You call the shots. You have just 5 minutes to score as many points as you can to make the leaderboard. Choose your play, grind it out with a run, pick up steady gains with a short pass, or risk it all with a long pass for a massive chunky yardage. But remember, the faster you answer, the more yards you gain. Hesitation is the enemy of the end zone. Keep the chains moving, cross that yellow line, and reset your downs to earn a critical audible. Use the audible to strip away two wrong answers and find your open receiver. Get inside the 35. You can even kick a field goal. You can find it all at pigskindispatch.com.